This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 118B. And we are on page 444, and we've been discussing the basis of optimism, a long-range vision, in which we know that the heavens radiating the will to good from distant cosmic sources will prevail. We have to remind ourselves of that, regardless of the tragic circumstances of the present, which could have been avoided had we not overemphasized in ignorance our own flaws. It is interesting to note, says the Tibetan, that the seventh ray of ceremonial law and order works through Uranus, which is today the transmitter of Sirian force via Pisces to the hierarchy. And of course, as I say, not just Uranus, but in this particular line of descent, but also Saturn and Neptune, as well as an undiscovered, maybe to be named, Isis. At least my friend and teacher Charles Jane thought so, and my colleague Nicholas Nilen is involved in trying to achieve a deeper understanding of Isis and its relation to these things. DK does show a mystery planet, undiscovered, through which the Sirian energy passes and which then, only then, goes to our three synthesizing planets. Could it be Isis, and could the period of Isis be some 360 years around the sun? But anyway, Uranus is involved. It has first ray implications as the synthesizing planet whose monad is on the first ray, just the way the other two have second and third ray monadic implications, respectively. From that middle center, it passes to the, and I suppose that is, Sirius is in a way cosmically a kind of middle center, but we're talking about a middle center on our planet. From that middle center, it passes to that sensitive band of disciples, aspirants, and workers, to whose hearts and hands is committed the heavy task incident to the reorganization and rebuilding of the shattered world structure. So we have the form-building aspect of the seventh ray and of the second ray. Rebuilding the shrine of man's living, it was supposed to be done in the last 60, almost 70 years. But the forces of evil, inspired by cosmic evil, are strong upon our planet, and we may not have fulfilled all of our possibilities. Matter of fact, just the way every human being looks back upon his or her life and decides, well, I could have done better, which is what future lives are for. I think humanity, looking back, will realize I could have done better, and hopefully future cycles will allow that to happen. So from the hierarchy, which is a middle center, just as the soul is the middle center in the constitution of man, it passes to that sensitive band of disciples, aspirants, and workers, to whose hearts and hands he has committed the heavy task incident to the reorganization and rebuilding of the shattered world structure. The power to build anew, it says at the second ray monad. The right use of the word and the using of the light, these will release the blessed one deep hidden in the ark, which is always some kind of vehicular structure built by the form building second ray. Second ray, the ray of form. Third ray, the ray of matter. And there is a difference. Form is a subtle relationship which configures matter in reflection of that relationship. The seventh ray has sometimes been called by the peculiar name, by knowers. It's a very evocative name. It's regarded as the ray of ritualistic decency. I'm remembering one of my sons who's very seventh ray, I think, in his soul, and he's as was the custom in those days, he remarked to something well done by saying, "Ah, decent, decent," as if the form was adequate to a more ideal form. The ray of an indecent is that which allows the elemental forces to get out of control. Decency keeps them where they belong, keeps all things where they belong. So we're speaking of the second ray and of the seventh particularly here, the seventh ray being strongly related to Capricorn, which we have been discussing, but particularly related here to Uranus as a dispenser of the Sirian force and the organizing, geometrical organizing potential of hierarchy coming in on the second and seventh rays. It is regarded as the ray of ritualistic decency. It aids and inaugurates the appearing of a new world order. Uranus is all about doing things in a better way than they have been done, and Aquarius, on a higher turn of the spiral, is about the same, just as long as one doesn't throw away the baby with the bathwater. It aids and inaugurates the appearing of a new world order based on a spiritual drive and an aspiration, mental freedom, loving understanding, and physical plane rhythm, which provides opportunity for full creative expression. This is wonderful with regard to the expression of the seventh ray. Marvelous paragraph that I don't recall attending to with sufficient care. Marvelous expression of the working of the seventh ray in all of its aspects, because it does combine all three rays in some equalizing order. It aids and inaugurates the appearing of a new world order based on a spiritual drive from the will and on aspiration from the lower self. On mental freedom, there's Uranus with mental freedom, and that's what we see a lot of people not wanting to ascribe to the old dogmas, do they? Loving understanding, there's the secondary aspect, and the physical plane rhythm, establish the right rhythm, we are told, in terms of the seventh ray. Take a look at this. Establish the right rhythm. We are learning here, I think it's in terms of the blessed ones. That means the seventh ray monads. There are monads in all the seventh rays, even though maybe not ultimately, but yes, they do exist. And the magician wants to know how to work. And the planetary one, who is his guide, the true magician behind the scenes, says to him, "Listen, O worker, in the furthest world, to the rhythm of the times, the world of materiality. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. Retire into the silence and attune yourself unto the whole. Then venture forth. Establish the right rhythm. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. For this blessed one, release is found in work. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words which will evoke the builders of the forms and thus create the new." So, these factors, these particular methods that the seventh ray uses in its expression, spiritual drive, aspiration, mental freedom, loving understanding, physical plane rhythm, it's all there to create a new world with Uranus, a seventh ray planet, assisting, renovating, renovating. Whenever we're dealing with Uranus, the word re is so important. Now, my audio connection has been lost in the other computer, and so for just a moment, test, test, no, it seems to be reestablished. We live in such a place. It's at the end of two internet lines. The towers are far away, and we get caught between, not being able to support a steady internet reception and transmission. So anyway, there is a right rhythm is being established. And to bring this about, energy from Shambhala, embodying the will to good, just as the will to good is embodied by those great and still greater lives, is fused and blended with the organizing energy of the seventh ray. Remember that Shambhala receives three types of will in this case, and is not only involved with the first line of transmission, but Pisces and Capricorn. What was it? The will to choose was one of them. Will to choose. I think that's it. Is that it? Yes. These are received by Shambhala. The will to self-determination, Leo. The will to sacrifice, Pisces. And the will to choose, under Capricorn. So the will of sacrifice is what we're talking about here now. All right. I'm trying to find my way back to where I was. We had covered quite a bit. Right. To bring this about, the energy from Shambhala, basically embodying the will to good, but other aspects of the will to good exist, of course. What is the good? I think it can only be seen by the all-seeing eye. Any partial vision cannot reveal the good, so in a way, only the universal logos can, or God, you know, as we might say it in one respect, can reveal the good through its all-seeing eye, the universal eye. To bring this about, the energy from Shambhala embodying the will to good is fused and blended with the organizing energy of the seventh ray, because, as we know, out of Shambhala comes purification, destruction, and organization. It's the third aspect, which is related to organization. So the seventh ray, being the concrete expression of the first, is related to that organizing power that comes from Shambhala. So the will to good of Shambhala is blended with the organizing energy of the seventh ray, and then carried to humanity along the stream of love, which emanates from hierarchy itself. So this tells us something about this Sirian transmission. Along the line of the Sirian transmission, Pisces governs this effort of the hierarchy because the highest aspect of Pisces, which humanity can at this time in any way comprehend, is that of mediatorship. So the Sirian energies are mediated to humanity. The will to good energies of Shambhala are mediated to humanity. This is the energy of mediation. There's an in-betweenness in Pisces, as we see even from its glyph, you know. There's a line there connecting these two half-moons, and there is with Uranus too, which is interesting. So Uranus is part of this mediation from the heavens, or at least translating that which comes from the heavens to humanity. This is the energy of mediation of right relationship, and Pisces is much involved with that because it's a relationship based on love. Today, as never before, the hierarchy stands as the mediating transmitter. It's the middle center, just like Sirius is a middle center. We almost might think that Sirius has this kind of function within the one about whom. Anyway, hierarchy is a reflection both of Sirius and of our solar logos, God of love. And hierarchy is the mediating, standing between a transmitter from above, and perhaps, as the Christ does, he mediates by transmitting to Shambhala that which towards which humanity aspires from below. Let us see what DK says of this as he elaborates the point. So, hierarchy stands as the mediating transmitter between humanity and the will of God. Well, this we even see at the Waysack Festival, and we see this also to an extent at the Christ Festival. Humanity, mediating transmitter between humanity and the will of God. The revelation of the true significance and purpose of that will as it stands before, behind all world events, is needed now as never before. So we, you know, hierarchy reveals to us that which is God's will. This can come through a closer relation between hierarchy and humanity, so humanity can be truly informed by the divine will and the divine purpose. Hierarchy is the mediator, how does it say, mediating transmitter between humanity and its karma. For it is equally essential that the laws for the transmutation of karma into present, active present good are clearly grasped. And let's just say that the passive viewer of the karma of oneself or others cannot transmute karma through right action. And hierarchy tells us what this action is, always based on lovingly wise response. So we could simply suffer under our karma and not know the meaning of the reason for it and not know how to respond, but given the hierarchical motives, we can respond in a transmutative way. By the way, when we have such a word as transmutation, transmutation is a word specifically related to the seventh ray and to Uranus, the great alchemist. Well, let's just say, the seventh ray lord is the is a divine alchemical worker. Anyway, something like that. And the seventh ray is the divine alchemist, and Uranus is much involved in the transmutation of lead into gold. Uranus, this is probably accomplished etherically to a certain extent, and Uranus rules the etheric body. Base metal into gold, base metal into the precious metals, and Uranus provides that rearrangement of the constituents of the lower elements, which transforms them into the higher elements. So Uranus and the seventh ray, always involved in rearrangement of the constituents, which allow for their transformation into something higher. So Uranus can rearrange the elements in a much more productive manner, along with the seventh ray, and give us more archetypal interactions, and so our baseness is relieved. This can happen in the human being, and the true alchemists were those who sought to transform the base human being into the elevated human being. And there is mediation as well, mediating transmitter between humanity and cosmic evil. Focus for many millennia of years in what has been called the Black Lodge speculation anent this lodge, and its activities are both fruitless and dangerous. Probably reveals some sort of covert fascination with these activities towards which the evil still resident within us responds. So DK has told us quite a bit about what it does, but speculation is kind of an invocation, isn't it? You know, if I try to speculate somewhat intuitively about the nature of these relationships, I hope to be invoking the intuition which will reveal precisely what the relationships are. So if one speculates too much on the Black Lodge, it is sends out an invocation to such existences. You know, in answer to the question, why are you so interested? What is it in you that is so interested? Is it for good purposes that you are interested, or is it it's simply that you are something within you is fascinated by that, perhaps something which corresponds to their own activity, because we are not free of that until the fourth initiation. That kind of evil disappears from us at the fourth degree. And until that time, says Blavatsky, we are often unconscious black magicians. So we have to learn how to handle evil through the will to good and oppose fire with fire. The fire of the will to good has to be opposed to this will to material satisfaction based upon ignorance. Hierarchy gives us the means of doing this. And also, it should be said that hierarchy as a great guardian wall protects the workers from the influences of the Black Lodge. Well, there was one point in which one of the disciples of Master DK was apparently undergoing these kinds of attacks. And DK said, well, look, I could protect you from this, but you would learn nothing. Learn naught. So sometimes a reasonable degree of non-lethal exposure has to be allowed so that one can learn how to handle these kinds of attacks, which will certainly intensify as we enter more and more into the ranks of hierarchy. Master Moria, or was it Helena Rorick quoting him? I'm not sure, but the sentence runs something like this. You trouble yourself with a few minor devils while the daggers of Satan are aimed at our backs. He was speaking of the hierarchical position relative to evil and even the shambolic position relative to evil, and trying to let us know that our relationship with evil beings was very minor compared to theirs. So there is mediation of this great middle center, mediating between humanity and the will of God, humanity and its karma, and humanity and the Black Lodge. I mean, I suppose some of our karma can be delayed until we finish certain required tasks. It can all be orchestrated from a certain point of view. And we can never be really separated from our karma, but in time and space, the karmic backlash can be so adjusted that certain works for the good can be accomplished without the interference. So those who are involved in the preparation for the reappearance of the Christ are marked out for special protection. So that certain works can be accomplished. Inevitably, the fullness of karma will be precipitated, but then it's a bit like a chemical reaction. You know, we can't just wait to be hit by the rebound. What we do, as Master Moria tells us, affects the way the karmic arrows hit us or glance off us or miss us. We can, even now, revise the astrochemical situation, which is constantly at work. So we must not speculate excessively about the Black Lodge. The latter fact is responsible for the widespread attack made upon Masonry during this century, and that was the 20th century. There has been among, because of some Masons, some warrant for that attack, but in general it is an unwarranted attack, as Masonry really represents the expression of the mysteries here on earth, the seat of initiation, the home of the mysteries. How was that put by Master DK? Seat of initiation? Custodian of the law, the home of the mysteries, and the seat of initiation. And it holds in its symbolism the ritual of deity and the way of salvation is pictorially preserved in its work. So that's how important Mason really is, and that's why it is so attacked, because really, in a way, it's hierarchy on earth. So that's in the externalization of the hierarchy page. Looks like page 511. So the Black Lodge wants to invalidate the church, wants to invalidate Masonry. And until Masonry can gain its proper footing, which now it is increasingly gaining under the reformative efforts of for one, Ancient Universal Mysteries, directed by Keith Bailey as the chief principal officer, and his co-workers. In Masonry, I'm a more distant co-worker. I'm certainly a member of the Lodge, and grateful to be so. Now, for almost 40 years in Masonry in one way or another, but those who are really working at the reformation of Masonry, just as I'm working in the field of esoteric education, they are really doing a good job. And they are establishing it on a very firm footing, which takes into consideration the hierarchical wisdom. Something of this nature was attempted back in the days of Alice Bailey. And there was a lodge of which she was the director there, I suppose, in the 1930s before the war began again. Or continued. And this has been taken up and early in the century, right? And even toward the end of the last century, the new Masonry is being established and founded. So, Masonry, inadequate and corrupt as it has been, and guilty of overemphasizing certain forms of symbols, is nevertheless the germ or seed of future hierarchical effort, when that effort is at some later date externalized on Earth. So through the Masonic organism, initiation, true initiation, will be possible, and also through the church organism, and also through the banded esoteric organisms, rays 1, 2, and 3. Masonry is governed by the seventh ray, although it educates first-ray types, and has a lot of fourth-ray in it as well, but it's governed by the seventh ray, and when certain important changes have been made and the spirit of Masonry is grasped instead of the letter, so there's that book dictated by the Tibetan to Alice Bailey and appearing under the name of Foster Bailey, The Spirit of Masonry, that's the name of the book. So, and when the spirit of Masonry is grasped and instead of the letter, then we shall see a new form of hierarchical endeavor appear to aid in the restoration of the ancient and sacred mysteries of men, among men. It's beautiful to know that this is in process and spreading around the world, in Europe and South America, and of course all over the United States. It is spreading. The esoteric education must spread, the Masonry must spread, and the new revised church must also appear. Okay. All right. The energy of Uranus, that's where we are, pouring upon and into humanity, produces the urge to better conditions, make conditions better, to provide better forms for the occult and esoteric life, and to blend more adequately the inner and the outer man. Just the way Mercury is a mediator, which links the poles between which it mediates, so Uranus in a higher sense is that as well. It rules the lowest of the creative hierarchies, but it also rules the cosmic ethers, and so can be the mediator, which can bring those, the energies of those higher ethers down into the systemic ethers on the systemic etheric plane. So these are important ways of considering Uranus, the urge to better conditions, to provide better forms for the occult and esoteric life, and those, I suppose, are human forms having to do maybe with the new use of the sacral center, but also organisms, organizations which better receive the occult energies and better express them, and to blend, interesting about blending more adequately the inner and the outer man, because it's like the imposition of the archetype upon the Saturnian forms, sometimes with a fair amount of destruction, as a person tries to be authentic, that's the word. Authenticity means adherence to archetype. I'll just make that maybe a little bit bigger for the sake of emphasis. Sometimes one looks for the ways in which the ways in which planets actually function in an esoteric sense, and every once in a while DK actually does give that. This is one of the reasons why the moon is spoken of so often as veiling Uranus. The moon is frequently used as a blind when Uranus is meant, and for the type of people that are more mentally focused, this is frequently the case. Every one of us has a moon position which is veiling predominantly one or other of the three normally veiled planets, either Vulcan, Neptune, or the moon. For the more advanced types, it's usually Uranus, which is bringing the occult world forward. It's a veil of a higher mentality. For the veil of Neptune has to do with those who are more emotionally polarized, and Vulcan more physically polarized. But there are also other configurations which suggest what the planet might be veiling, and that has to do with the sign that it's in or the sign that's prominent. If a person is a Taurian or a Virgoan, there can be a strong Vulcan veil within the moon. And of course, if the moon is in Virgo, either Vulcan or Neptune are found. If the moon is in Aquarius, then Vulcan, Neptune, or Uranus will be found as the veils, and one has to choose. So there are several levels of veiling here. One has to do with more or less the status of the individual in terms of the spiritual development, and the other has to do with the particular signs that are involved and their relation to one of the planets which the moon usually veils. I suppose everybody should look into their horoscope and try to look at the possible veils associated with the moon and say which is most likely in the type of life you've been leading and in terms of the aspirations and objectives that you have. So the moon is frequently used as a blind when Uranus is meant, but you know, also the other planets are there. Today, the moon is a dead world. And the reason is that the Uranian urge became so strong in that far distant time. So, you know, in the intervention of the Solar Logos, which took away the living beings on that planet and transferred them to somewhere else, Uranus was involved. It would have been the Sun, Uranus, and our planetary Logos through his extension or chain, the moon chain. The Uranian urge became so strong in that far distant time when there were living forms upon the moon that it led to the complete and final evacuation of the moon and the transfer of its life to our planet. Now, whether this, whether the Earth as a dense physical planet and the moon existed together simultaneously, that is a question. Because sometimes, you know, the story is that one chain completes and another chain has to be formed before the life goes to that form. But as the chakras tend to exist simultaneously, so these chains of the Earth scheme may be existing simultaneously, and it may be that the transfer occurred immediately or perhaps eventually. We're told that many lives from the moon chain came in the third sub-race of the fourth root race in this fourth round of our Earth chain. And it seems that there's somewhere in the teaching the discussion of the period of pralaya into which some of the moon chain lives were led or cast, and the work that was done in that pralayic state to make it possible for them to pick up the evolutionary threads on our particular chain. But this is, you know, there's the whole idea of evacuation, and what is it called when one is a migration? Let's see. And this... the idea of becoming a refugee and changing one's country. A transference from one location in space to another. Just like Mercury, only perhaps in a more drastic manner. Mercury rules many moves from here to there, and when you move from one country to another, it's oftentimes a new start under the Uranian urge. A whole new structure, a new foundation, a new beginning. So we're talking about a Uranian urge, and this had to be, I suppose, in cooperation with the Solar Locus, because it was he that decided that the moon chain had to come to an end. It's like a deactivating a certain chakra or a subsidiary focus within one's own chakras, because the Earth represents a certain chakra within the Solar Locus, eventually the base of the spine chakra, but possible associations with other chakras, such as the spleen, let us say. And in terms of the fecundity of the Earth, there could be a sacral center association, and also a mental unit association. So whether the Earth represents, for once and for all, only the base of the spine chakra, or whether it has certain other functions, as I said, I've had this theory that connected with every chakra, there must be, of the Solar Logos, there must be at least three planetary logoi, which, like a triangle in revolution, ascend to the most prominent, predominant position at one time or another. I don't know how I'd go about proving that, but when I see that several planets are associated with the centers, and DK even seems to give two when he looks at ordinary individuals and disciples. I mean, let's just say that both Earth and Saturn are associated with the throat center, and Mars and Neptune with the solar plexus, and Jupiter and the Sun with the heart center, and both Vulcan and Pluto with the head center, and so forth. It seems that in order to sustain a particular chakra, any one of these planetary schemes can play the major role as that chakra at certain times in the general mutation which occurs in time and space in the development of a solar logos. But suffice it to say, there was the word that I was looking for, and now it's come to me, is transference or translation. Expressing something entirely in terms of something else, changing languages, as it were. So, there came a time for the denudation, denuding of the misdirected effort called the Moon Chain, a part of our planetary logos and perhaps related to his sacral center or throat center. In any case, there has now been a replacement for the Moon Chain, and it's called the Saturn Chain, and different subplanetary logoi, I think, are involved in the informing and administrating of these chains. And it may be that, as seems to be hinted, that the Lord of the Moon Chain moved in with the Lord of the Earth Chain, and they are cooperating together to facilitate the progress of those lives which belong specifically to the Earth Chain, and those which had their evolution interrupted on the Moon Chain. It must be difficult for two to live in one house, but that's part of our problem right now, that Moon Chain lives are sharing space or a chain with Earth Chain lives. So this transfer, it may be that many lives had to wait in Pralaya before the transfer of its life to our planet. It doesn't talk about how long that took. And of course, our planet had to be in the right condition for this to happen. So we get into the old question of the sequential activation of the chains, even though they may be simultaneously present, that's one way, or of the sequential building of chains, which I think seems a bit too linear when you make the analogy to our own chakra system, where all the chakras are existing simultaneously. Now, there may have been in the early days a kind of sequential appearance of chakras, but we're not just talking about early days here. We're talking about the planetary scheme of Earth, which was well in process. We also have to talk about the appearance of the planetary schemes themselves as they are chakras within the solar logos. The myths seem to talk about the seven brothers being simultaneously present. But there is also a possibility of some degree of sequential appearance, and certainly of sequential activation beyond the base level of at least sustaining the presence of the chakra. I mean, we all know, for instance, that in early man, the throat center is far less active than it will be later. The Ajna center too, for that matter. Only the subdiaphragmatic centers, and even they can be sequentially activated, are the prominent ones, and there is a sustained presence of the higher chakras, but their time has not come. So there was a complete and final evacuation. I sometimes think, I recently saw this movie. Don't know how it happened, but it was pretty good. It was called Man of Steel. It's the ongoing Superman saga, and they're leaving their planet called Krypton, which is exploding, disintegrating because of various unbalanced factors, and Superman is sent toward the Earth, where he is raised by a farming couple by the name of Kent, and so he has kind of a dual identity, kind of Geminian in that respect. But these stories about having to leave one's planet, I wonder if they're not deeply rooted in the evacuation from the Moon and the Moon Chain, which was experienced by many of the lives who are now on Earth, and even by human beings who are already individualized at that point. I wonder if that is not deeply recessed in the consciousness. Such a transfer is not necessary today, as the consciousness of humanity is such that the needed changes can be brought about without such a drastic procedure. You know, it sounds very much like a solar logoic intervention. And, you know, just to put things in proportion, here's the solar logoic intervention in our in the life of our planetary scheme, and just think that the Solar Logos almost intervened in the First World War in the year 1917, but the necessity for that was averted. That I always find shocking, because it's rare enough to find a shambolic intervention, yet alone an intervention by the great blue logo. So something must have been seriously upset in the balance of humanity and the planet at that time. That would have been a drastic procedure, and who knows exactly what form that would have taken. Would it have been some sort of universal epidemic, which incidentally did follow that war? You know, such was the depletion, the devitalization, the depression, that the influenza could take hold. So apparently on our planet at the moment, in connection with our fourth chain, there is no need for a denudation of the planet, because certain lessons have been learned. I think some, to use the contrary of the seventh ray word, some indecent things happened on the moon, and the moon's influence on our planet today inclines towards those things, because they were not held in check. When there is decency, the primal impulses are held in check. And they were not on that chain and its planet. And even today there have been outbreaks of indecency occurring, I think, under lunar influence. It is, however, this Uranian influence which lies behind the present shifts of populations. Yes, that's one of the things with which Uranus is really connected, even in conventional astrology. Uranus connection to the shifts in populations, which are population transfers throughout Europe and Great Britain, and which is responsible for the steady movement of peoples from east to west. These are the two hemispheres, and the center of occult advancement is switching to the west, we've been told, you know, based upon the wisdom of the east. So even Tibet, which was the great repository of occult wisdom before the Chinese descended upon it, was in a way forced to bring its wisdom to the west, from which it could gain sustainment and to establish centers in the west, which it has done on a grand scale and successfully. It's all part of the plan, I'm sure. So the steady movement of peoples from east to west, from Asia to Europe, in the earlier history of that continent, and from Europe to the Western Hemisphere in more modern times. The movement towards the west. First, in the populating of Europe, apparently, and then in the repopulating of the Americas with the products of the fifth root race. Of course, it did, in a sense, belong to the fourth root race, and the indigenous people there were, in many ways, replaced by fifth root race types. Whether we can we argue about the fairness of such a thing? In a way, not fair, but one has to look at this from the perspective of the Manu and of the creating of situations which will be beneficial in the long run for even those groups whose way of life is changed or altered or apparently suppressed. The prophecy would be that the Indians of America would return in new robes. And many, I think, have incarnated into the fifth root race types and brought in their feathers with them, which indicates the connection to the Deva kingdom, to the power of flight. I think I've talked about this before, but I think many of the Western types who illegitimately brought great cruelty to the American Native Americans reappeared wearing cowboy hats on the reservations. I think shocking stories of reciprocal karma, once they can be verified as true, will really prove the point. So anyway, these big relocations, that's what we're talking about. The word re is there, a change in location. So I'm going to call them that here. And when there are relocations in the individual chart from one place to another, or maybe even from one plane to another, Uranus can be involved, because a plane is a location in consciousness. And when Uranus strikes, there can be a refocusing on a different plane of consciousness. So when you're interpreting your chart, try to keep that in mind. In the study of the interlocking of these triangles, it will become apparent to the student that the combination of the influences of Sirius, Leo, Uranus, I remember before we had, interesting, we had Sirius, Jupiter, how did it go? Sirius, Leo, Jupiter, that's how it went. So in this, you know, just to remember, Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. Jupiter and Uranus are closely related because they produce a beneficent organization or reorganization, which is, in effect, mastership, you know, around page 71 of Esoteric Astrology. That the influences of Sirius, Leo, Uranus, it was Saturn in terms of the descent, but from another perspective, we're dealing with the Sirian festival at the time of the Leo full moon, when Uranus can be veiled, at least for the hierarchical types, has been much needed at this time. So you see, what he's doing here is bringing about talking about the interrelation of these triangles, because they have certain shared rulers. And just the way we talked about Saturn being important in the triangle of humanity, which ordinarily was just Capricorn, Mercury, humanity, but Saturn as the ruler of Capricorn. So now we're talking about the importance of Uranus in the Sirius Leo Saturn triangle, but Uranus is the ruler of Leo, veiled hierarchically. So it's been much needed at this time to foster and bring about those conditions which will enable mankind, under the steady influence of the hierarchy, there's a great persistence and steadiness in hierarchy, to take the first initiation and give birth to the Christ, and entering into a new dimension, a strong relocation in consciousness. Thus revealing and bringing into the light of day the inner hidden spiritual man, and Uranus is the heavenly one and has to do with that heavenly man. Uranus is the heavenly one and relates to the inner spiritual man, and the bettering of conditions so that that man can emerge. It is in Leo that man undergoes preparatory stages, the preparatory stages of this first initiation. Because, you know, interesting, you have to be on the path of aspiration before you can even think of the first initiation. And in the Leo petal, the fifth petal, counting from Aries at the first petal, which is one legitimate way to do it, in that Leo petal, the path of aspiration can be entered in the latter part of the unfoldment of that petal. He finds himself and becomes self-conscious. Then he arrives at the stage of intelligent discipleship, as Leo is a very mental sign from a certain perspective, having much of the fifth ray. He formulates a conscious inner program or purpose under the steady pressure of the life of the indwelling Christ, because the indwelling Christ emerging does force the issue. It begins to exhaust and deny the demands and desires of the lower nature, and this happens in the fifth petal. One cannot live for oneself alone, no matter how glorious one thinks that self may be. In the fifth petal. So all of these things are Leo-like. Remember, we talked about the connection of Capricorn and Leo to the first initiation, the birth of the Christ, but also the emergence in greater glory of the inner God who is the Christ, at least the inner God on one level, the soul. This cycle of experience is followed by a painful life of conscious reorientation. This is all going on in the fifth petal. And, all this is transpiring in the fifth petal. This cycle of experience is followed by a painful life of conscious reorientation. Now, that is a kind of reversal of the wheel. And Uranus is always involved in right? Uranus and reorientation, which will lead to the polarization of consciousness in a different vibrational location. So, a painful life of conscious reorientation. This is a really good description of a fifth petal process going on here. Of course, here it is in the astrology book, but that's the point. If we are sufficiently familiar with the books, we can relate the factors that we discover to each other, and more light can pour in. Followed by a painful life of conscious reorientation, a cycle wherein he achieves balance and begins to stand in spiritual being. So Libra is there, Libra with Leo, having to do with the reversal of the wheel. See, he's not calling it that, but that's what we're dealing with. Leo and Libra, incarnation, a reversal of the wheel. As a result of constant trial and testing, which is Scorpio, and that is also a fifth petal process. Because Scorpio, from one point of view, rules the fifth petal if we assign the love petals to the element of water. And also, if we begin moving backwards, let's see how that would go clockwise. Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, that's three, Sagittarius, Scorpio. Scorpio is found then, with Pisces as the beginning, or the first petal, go forth into matter, and Scorpio would be found ruling the trials and tests of the fifth petal. So much is going on at that fifth petal unfoldment, and the solar angels are really taking an interest, a direct interest, in the fate and development of the human being they have under supervision, provided that things are moving, provided that the person is passing that test. Those three are together in many ways. The fifth petal is a middle point. So, fifth petal, middle point, because five is the center of nine. And though it's not technically true that Libra is exactly in the center, it's called that, because you can't get the center out of 12. But if you have 13, which includes the central life, then Libra is indeed the hub of the wheel and the middle. So DK is really telling us about some psychological processes here through which we all will pass under different energies of the zodiac. Finally, he stands ready for the ideal and the accolade of fire preceding the first initiation and mediated by Vulcan and Pluto. They're very powerful at all initiations, but especially DK mentions them in the first initiation. And the fiery pain in Leo is experienced, and this is the preparation to transfer on to the fixed cross. And maybe Pisces will be involved, because Pisces is often a transitional sign as you are moving from one cross to the next. As you move from the mutable cross to the fixed cross, Pisces may be there signaling one of the last incarnations on the mutable cross. And when you're moving from the fixed cross to the cardinal cross, as one does after the fourth initiation, Pisces represents that sense of total loss, which allows that kind of transfer into the life of the spirit. And at this final stage, and, you know, there had to be a point to it all, didn't there? Humanity today stands. When, as is now the case, the influence of Uranus is added to the other influences of Leo, Pisces, Scorpio, And the seventh ray is at the same time entering into a major cycle of activity on the Earth. There is then present the energy needed to precipitate, there's the seventh ray idea, the crisis of initiation, the first initiation ruled by the seventh ray, interestingly enough, and produce a great rhythmic awakening, all under law and order and externalized and with the Christ at a certain time actually officiating on the planet at this first initiation. That's an amazing thought. It will be a great actual and symbolic representation of inner life occurring on the outer plane. Astrologers would find it of interest to note similar combinations in the individual horoscope. One has to have a lively eye to note the combinations, which may not be obvious, but we've been talking about Pisces, well, in this case, there's a mixture. We've been talking about, as he says, as he put it, Leo, Sirius, Leo, and Uranus. Sirius, the sponsor of all initiation on our planet, Leo, emerging at the first initiation and also at the reversal of the wheel, and, well, at the second initiation is the heart of the sun, and the third initiation as the radiance of the soul, and at the fourth initiation is the causal body to be destroyed, and so forth. And Uranus making possible the transfer. So basically what he's been doing, he's been mixing the triangles here. Sirius from the second stream of force, Leo from the first stream of force, Uranus from the second stream of force. So after presenting to us what these influences really mean, he starts to show their interrelationships. Fascinating material, obviously, in a sense, scratching the surface, but making possible the sense of connection. So this is the end of Esoteric Astrology 118b, and we're on page 447. And beginning, I think it'll be of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 119a, page 447. All right, friends. Really, really interesting material, but we have to reach the point of synthesis in our understanding here so that these things are not just isolated presentations and apparent facts, but they begin to become organically related and we begin to see the interplay of these noted energies. And the good offices of the planet Mercury will help us create that fluidity of mind which allows us to see this interplay. All right, I'll go on to 119 when I can. Talk to you a little later. Bye-bye.